Forecast, your geopolitical briefing for what you need to know now. I'm Bobby Valentine. I'm the new engagement editor over here at War on the Rocks, and I'll be hosting the Warcast from here on out. The Warcast is for War on the Rocks members only, so spread the word to those who should join up by going to warontherocks.com/subscribe.
Back in May, the U.S. withdrew from the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action regarding Iran's nuclear program. This set to reinstate a whole suite of economic sanctions aimed to compel Iranian compliance. Those sanctions that restrict gas and petrol sales from Iran go into force November 4th, which is now less than 2 weeks away. Iraq, who is a major importer of Iranian gas, has requested an exception or postponement, but so far, the U.S. has signaled it is committed to enforce all sanctions, including to all buyers. Joining us today is Douglas Olivant. He's a senior fellow at New America and former NSC director for Iraq. He is also managing partner at Mantid International, a global strategic consulting firm, which, in full disclosure, currently includes active offices in Iraq. Douglas, thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
I'd like to start with understanding the problem a little bit better. Just how dependent is Iraq on Iranian imports?
Well, Iraq is a neighbor of Iran. You know, it's inherent that sanctions on a country fall more strongly on its neighbors. You know, for the Europeans, trading with the Iranians is somewhat of a luxury. For the Iraqis, it's a neighbor. It's hard not to trade with them in the same way it's hard for the United States not to trade with Canada and Mexico. So these sanctions present a additional burden to the Iraqis that they present to few other countries. In particular, as you mentioned, the sanctions on gas imports. Iraq is tied to Iran economically, partially through gas imports. Iraq imports gas from Iran and uses that gas to fire its electric plants. And for any of us who are watching events in Iraq this summer about the riots over the lack of electricity, the thought of taking more electricity out of the Iraqi national grid is slightly terrifying to Iraqi politicians.
If I've been following correctly, Iraq just elected a new president and appointed a new prime minister. Is that going to impair their ability to make a decision like this? And even once they make a decision, how to execute upon it in the short term?
Well, the Iraqis are certainly in a bad position right now. One of the consequences of the government that the international community more or less imposed on Iraq in 2005 is after their elections, every 4 years, they have to form a government. Even if that process goes smoothly, and it very seldom does, it takes 4 or 5 months. Now, we did have a president finally elected by the parliament at the beginning of this month, at the beginning of October, Barham Saleh, who's a Kurd. He immediately, within a couple hours, designated a prime minister to form a government. However, that person, Adil Abdul Mahdi, is the prime minister designate. He's trying to put together a government, but he is not the prime minister until he and his government are approved by the parliament. We hope that happens in the very near future, in the next week or so, but historically, it has taken a long time. So right now, the Iraqis have a caretaker government, the old prime minister, the old ministers, but they're lame ducks and really don't have the mandate to conduct any significant negotiations to open new ground and bind the next government.
So who's the current decision maker then for about whether or not they comply?
Well, the current decision maker is still Prime Minister Abadi. He is still the prime minister until a new one is approved by the parliament. But again, he's a lame duck. He's clearly not going to be the next prime minister. You know, so this is akin to, you know, cutting a deal with President Obama after the November 16 elections. You know, it's not viable. It's not going to be honored. Everyone knows you're just a caretaker government that keeps the lights on and does routine things, but you don't take new actions. So I don't think the Iraqis are going to be able to take significant steps on this until they have a full government in place. So let me talk about what I know they have done. The Iraqis sent a technical team here earlier this month, I want to say 3, maybe 4 weeks ago, so it might have been the end of September, to talk to the American government about the effects of the sanctions on Iraq and ask for a limited set of exemptions to the sanctions. My understanding, I was not in those meetings, but my understanding is that about 90% of that presentation was about these gas imports, and then actually a spare part supply for all the Iranian cars that the Iraqis own was also an issue that was mentioned. The Iraqis import a lot of other things by the Iranians, but almost everything else could be substituted. They get a lot of produce from the Iranians, but you can buy produce from everywhere. You can develop a new supply chain. So I don't think they're going to ask for an exemption on that. But for the gas, right now there's no other place to get it. There's no other supply. There's no other gas-producing state in the region that has the infrastructure connected to Iraq to replace those imports. So if they don't buy it from the Iranians, they simply don't have it today.
What is the calculus here for the U.S. right now? What will determine their decision regarding whether or not they issue an exception?
My understanding, and again, I'm not in the U.S. government, but my understanding of what's going on in the government is that the ability to provide exemptions to these sanctions is held very, very high. Frankly, I don't think anyone other than the president or the national security advisor, Mr. Bolton, is going to be able to give that exemption. And Mr. Bolton only because he and the president have a shared picture on these things. So if Mr. Bolton were to approve something, the president would almost certainly acquiesce. The issue right now is, again, this technical team came to town last month. They were well-armed. But they're a technical team. A technical team does not get to go see the president. Only another head of state or head of government gets to come see the president. And the Iraqis don't have one of those right now. They do have a new president, but they don't have a prime minister, so it's really not appropriate for him to come visit. So again, the sequencing, the Iraqis really have to get a government in place. And I suspect one of the first things that government will do in the first week is send one or both of their senior figures, the president, the prime minister, here to the United States to ask to talk directly to the president of the United States about these sanctions. I suspect that what they'll point out is the U.S. actually has a history of giving exemptions to sanctions for neighbors that are important allies. From the invasion of Kuwait in 1990 until the overthrow of the Saddam Hussein regime in 2003, Iraq was under sanctions, quite strict sanctions by the United States. Even during those strict sanctions, we allowed an exemption for Jordan. We allowed Jordan to train with the Iraqis for exactly the same reason we're talking about now. To ask Jordan to not trade with a very large neighbor would just put a huge burden on that state. So the Iraqis remember that, and they're reminding us that we have a history of doing this, and I think are going to ask for a similar, although much more narrowly tailored, exemptions to the sanctions. And I think they're going to ask for them for a very limited time period. It will be a, look, we buy our gas from the Iranians, we need this many years. And I'm not a gas technical person. I don't know if they need 3 years or 5 years or 7 years to develop an alternative supply, whether imported from someone else or developed from their own resources. I suspect that if they're going to get those sanctions, they're going to have to make a very credible case showing these are the steps we are taking to disentangle ourselves from the Iranian regime. We need exemption from the sanctions so long as we meet these milestones to disentangle ourselves.
Douglas, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.